You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is Motormania with Damien Reid.
And I'm still joined by Naz in the studio. And Shanjado has just joined us in the studio this morning. Good morning, guys. Good morning, Intershan. You've just made it in, literally putting the headphones on as we sit. I've just thrown
straight into it, like a Saturn rocket.
You're a professional. Yeah, absolutely. Straight into the seat, because there is a bit of Ramadan traffic around this morning. So if you are out on the roads, do be careful and stay safe out there. Let's go straight to a question. We've got a question here from Katish, and he says, "Hi guys, I'd like to get your opinion on this one too. What is your review of Genesis cars, specifically their SUVs?" Now, I'm going to throw it to both of you because I've not driven a Genesis yet.
I have not driven a Genesis in a while, but I will say that they're...
Genesis, if you're out there, lend us some cars for Motormania. We'll review them.
But you know what? I think they're occupying the space that Lexus used to have as something sort of a little bit below, adjacent to the German brands, which sort of the unassailable brand. But the Genesis stuff is a little bit more approachable, but all the technology and actually quite nice dynamics and engines.
And really good design.
Yeah. Striking.
Yeah.
I think they've established themselves as a proper luxury brand in a fairly short space of time.
Yeah, and there's I just saw the concept of their four-seat convertible, like a very big sort of like Mercedes S-Class style convertible. It's a concept, but my goodness, it looks nice.
Striking presence, etc. As the Germans start to wander into ever more esoteric designs, that's putting it kindly, I think Genesis is out there saying this is traditional conservative luxury, what it looks like.
Yeah, yeah. Naz, what are your thoughts on the Genesis?
Yeah, so I was actually very pleasantly surprised. It was I think it was called the GV70, which is one of within the 4x4 range, and as Inchan said, sitting inside it, it was really luxury, and not only luxury but high quality luxury. I mean, you know, I do the typical thing where I knock on all the different panels and try to break things off, and it was actually built really well. So I'd compare this to the Lexus, maybe the Infiniti of the Chinese world. I mean, they're really up there in terms of premium, and like you said, they look phenomenal as well.
Well, they're Genesis is part of the Hyundai group, so they're the Korean brand,
the luxury arm,
but they're at the top end. So you're right. They're like what Lexus is to Toyota,
Genesis
is to Hyundai, and absolutely.
Whatever happened to Infiniti? I think Infiniti was on a great tear in the early 2000s, and lately we're just not hearing a lot out of them.
No,
but we'd like to.
We're one of the extremely few export markets for Infiniti. It was North American effectively, and I think in Japan they're still badged.
Kind of the Japanese BMW. If Lexus is the Japanese Mercedes, Infiniti was the Japanese BMW.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah. Mm. It's interesting.
But then it works inverse as well. Like if you look at it from a used car pricing, 2015 Patrol versus 2015 Infiniti, you'd expect the Infiniti to be worth more, right?
Yeah.
It's not.
Good point.
No.
Patrol's worth more.
Because there is a sustained perception, and there's a styling issue as well.
Same car.
The big blue wheel.
speaking of aging four-wheel drives, Imtashan, I'm looking at you. Now, you're the...
Hey. Early in the morning.
You're the guy who's done a beautiful restoration job on a Toyota Land Cruiser.
Others might say, but
you did, yeah, absolutely. So we've got on the line, just for you this morning at the Shan, and as us well, we've got Shadi on the line, who has is asking whether to replace his FJ Cruiser, a 2014 model, 360,000 kilometres with the Land Cruiser. Good morning, Shadi.
Hi, good morning. Ramadan Kareem, everyone.
Ramadan Kareem.
Ramadan Kareem.
Thanks for joining us. Now, yes, you're into the old Land Cruisers. Tell us your story with the FJ.
So I moved to the UAE in 2014, and right then and there I knew I needed a car that could, you know, handle the terrain and the weather, and I just went with the FJ. I bought one straight from the dealership, and I got all the service done at the dealership just to save myself any kind of headache. And it's been great with me. I love it. It's amazing. But just lately, you know, just with the wear and tear, I think it's just the aging, you know, in regards to, like, certain parts need to be changed out. So I just found out that the cost is better in regards to maybe getting a new Land Cruiser. I love them. So I thought, you know, with the family growing, to get a Land Cruiser. And I was just wondering, what do you guys think? Do you guys think it's better maybe put another 20,000 in the FJ and make it.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing wrong with it. It's amazing. It runs well. You know, never had any problems with it.
Well, Indrashen, you're the guy who's just you've done the hard yards and you're enjoying your restoration.
The question I have for Shadi is, what exactly are you doing with your car? Are you taking it to the dunes? Is it a family car? Does it need to be up there?
It's a family car. It's a work car for me, man. It's been amazing. I probably take it out to the desert maybe 2 times in the last 10 years, you know?
Okay.
So, and I've always done the service at the dealership.
And that's quite interesting because we did a poll of Land Cruiser owners that the dealership did a few years ago. Found only 5% actually go off-road considering what the Land Cruiser is. I think for your use case, a Land Cruiser does make sense. There are some differences. Obviously, it's a bigger, heavier car. It won't be quite as good on fuel. Actually, what am I saying? The FJ is terrible on fuel. So you know this. Not a surprise. So the Land Cruiser actually might be slightly better on fuel. It's a lot more spacious. Off-road-wise, it's pretty good. You just have to remember that it's not an FJ. It doesn't have those high bumpers, etc. So off-road, you don't bump it and so on. I would recommend the new 300 series. I hear the 4-liter is pretty good. If you're not really bothered about speed or performance that much, it's a very solid engine. Or you go for the twin turbo. But if you want to hang on and wait, the new Prado is coming. And that's basically a cut-down Land Cruiser. And that's coming hopefully quite soon.
I went to the dealership. It's just the Prado, they told me they're not going to have them in for like about another 5 or 6 months before they can have them in stock.
But it's going to be cheaper. The Land Cruiser is quite expensive, but it's selling off. So it depends which one you can afford, really. Where does your budget stretch to?
Yeah, you're definitely right about that. It's just when I got the FJ, I was a bachelor. Now I'm a family with like 4 kids, you know.
It's Land Cruiser time. Sorry, it is Land Cruiser time. It's happened.
Yeah, but it's a great car. So you think better is the Land Cruiser, right?
Where you're going, there's only one answer. It's only Land Cruiser.
Yeah. And we'll also, Shadi, we just happen to have the managing director of Toyota and Lexus, Jacques Sprint, in the studio a little later on. So we might throw that one into the ballpark as well and give you an answer from from the boss.
So from your guys' experience, how long do the FJs last? Like, how many miles can they keep going?
Ooh,
or long?
That's a good question, but I would say you're looking at about, you're right about where they should be. 10, 15 years, 500,000 kilometers, that's about where they are. But the Toyotas, so, you know, you can always rebuild them.
Yeah.
There you go, Shadi.
Okay, thanks so much, guys.
No problems at all. I hope they give you some sound advice on that.
This is Motor Mania on Dubai Eye 103.8.
The UAE's number one talk radio station.
Yeah, a lot to get through in this show before midday. One of the things we did go through though was the launch of the new look Rolls-Royce showroom here on Sheikhzayed Road down at AGMC, and one of the first showrooms in the world to have the new corporate global look that's being incorporated at all the showrooms around the world to emphasise, I guess, a younger buyer that's now coming into Rolls-Royce. Thanks largely to things like the Ghost and the Wraith, the two-door as well. And also they're bringing in some electric vehicles. So they had some very special cars there on display. And I spoke to Mamdou Akarala, he's the general manager of Rolls-Royce AGMC, about them. And we started with the gorgeous all-new and all-electric Spectre.
The Spectre is the first ultra, I would say, super coupe electric car, full electric car from Rolls-Royce. And it was made to be Rolls-Royce first. It's never been, when you drive the car, you never get the feeling that you are in a normal electric car. This is a Rolls-Royce first before it comes as an electric car, and this is the most sellable car right now with the huge waiting list on it. But as you said rightly, I have behind me here the Phantom Dragon. This is the Dragon of the Year. This is to celebrate the leap year for the leap new year. And Rolls-Royce, when they have done that, this is one of 4 cars around the world. Of course, we have the Eclipses. It's one of 25 cars globally. Over here with us as well. Again, the customer allow us to display the car here in our showroom. And last but not least, we have the iced black, diamond black Cullinan, which is behind us over there. Yes.
And I guess that's the thing with Rolls-Royce in Dubai, is that it is probably one of the highest showrooms in the world for bespoke, for people coming in and asking for tailor-made cars specifically for them.
Actually, the nature of the customer in Dubai in general, in UAE in general, but in Dubai in specific, they are always looking for that kind of like elevating the level of their inquiries in their car. These cars always built on dreams. Our customer, when they come here, they just let go with the imagination. They want this and that, and they never been like, you know, try to make it less here or less there. They try to make the car on the level of Dubai, and of course, it's showcased all the time. So most of the cases we're dealing with is bringing dreams to reality by building the cars for our customers.
Yeah, so that was Mamdou Karala, the general manager of Rolls-Royce AGMC, talking about, well, the Spectre, but also the bespoke cars they had down there. They had the, as you say, the Eclipsis, which is a version of the Ghost Black Badge, which is the more sporting Rolls-Royce. And they also had the...
Dragon?
A tribute to the Chinese, yeah. Because it's the year of the dragon, the Phantom extended wheelbase, the EWB. One of four that have been commissioned in the world. Two of them are here in the region. One of those is actually the Cullinan, but there's three Phantom EWBs, and that was one down there.
What would the year of the Damien Rolls-Royce look like?
Let me think. Lots of, let's see, Tim Bernardi steering wheels, some knurled metal on the dash.
Slightly and, more alpha.
A bit of a raspy exhaust note and a pair of Weber carburetors. Thank you very much.
Done deal. Cell 5.
What would be the Impdeshan Rolls-Royce?
Oh, that's easy. Orange, gold wheels, tan interior.
There you go. Naz, what would be your spec? Because you can build it as you like with Rolls-Royce.
Honestly, Black Badge. I mean, just that Infinity logo. Just a black one. The exclusivity of having that black
badge. Just a black one.
Exactly, basically, yeah.
The Ghost Black Badge that the Eclipsis model they have there is, I have to say, it's nice. It's black with the orange pinstriping. It's got...
Very nice.
It's actually, believe it or not, and it doesn't sound right on radio, you've got to check it out. It's got white wall tyres. Go and have a look and believe it for yourself.
I can't picture that.
Believe it. No, it actually works. It looks
70s Cadillac.
It actually looks all right. The interior, it's a orange on black theme through the interior with a starlight roof, a starlight in the door trim as well. But the Spectre as well, as you said, all electric vehicle from Rolls-Royce. And I guess, Naz, we're talking about off-air. It's kind of – Rolls-Royce have been promoting for 50 years or more that the loudest thing you should hear inside is the clock.
The clock, yeah.
It's endless talk. It's silent. They described an electric vehicle 50 years ago. So it makes sense that they should actually build an EV.
It does. It does. But I kind of miss the 6 3/4 V12. You know, I like the sound, the little hum of the engine.
They
perfected
that for so long, just getting it perfect. And then
because it's kind of engine feat in itself, making an engine that smooth. That you don't even realize.
Yeah.
They work so hard to make it all the characteristics of an electric vehicle. And now they've got an electric vehicle that does that. So we're hoping, fingers crossed, and that Motor Mania will get their hands on a Spectre. And we can
What will we do with it?
How many people we can fit inside it? No, we can't do that kind of thing. We're responsible. But yeah. Speaking of, okay, let's move to the other end of the market. Impdeshan, you've just picked up the latest toy from Mazda.
I actually really like, by the way. Briefed as in it's a trusty runaround. It's not a trusty runaround. It's a tiny little sports car. It is the original sports car. It is the Mazda MX-5 Miata, as it's known in the US to its friends. The classic British-style Japanese sports car that they've been making since 1989. I cannot give you a full review of it because I literally picked it up last night, and it has been quite a mission to get this car because it's been away for a bit, but Galadhar is bringing it back, and I think you should get one. Sadly, only available in automatic. Prices are 150. I know.
That was my question.
Yeah, same.
I've asked. There's a lot of humming and hawing about it, but I just think that people out here necessarily don't want a manual, which they should because the MX-5 is made to be a manual. But initial impressions are, why don't they make more cars like this? Classic sports cars. People don't know what they are.
I've driven a lot of MX-5s/Miatas over the years.
Because of your youth.
And I've never driven an automatic. Yeah, I know. I drove the first one when I knew it was a press car.
I didn't even think they'd come in. They shouldn't come in automatic.
And you owned one.
It's a good automatic.
You owned one for a short time.
I owned one in 08. I still know the owner. He actually works with me. It's very random. Beautiful cars. Absolutely beautiful. You know, people often ask me when I had an MX-5, why didn't you buy like a Mustang? Why didn't you buy one of those, the 350Z at the time?
Yeah.
And the answer is very simple. If you don't know what an MX-5 is, none of those cars make sense. Because an MX-5 is its own thing.
I'm going to show my age, unfortunately, here. The project chief of the MX-5 was a friend of mine, a guy called Bob Hall, who was actually a motoring journalist, an American motoring journalist with his twin brother. And lived in Australia for a while, worked for a magazine called Wheels Magazine in Australia. And
Did he speak Japanese?
He became the... I think he does, yeah.
Yeah, very handy.
And he became the project chief, and he came up with the concept of the MX-5. So they bought a Lotus Elan, they put it into the design studio in Japan and tore it apart and said,
wow,
build me one of these.
But better.
And I loved the first one. I really had a great – it was a 1.6 litre, not a whole lot of power, but it wasn't about power. It's about enjoyment.
It's a driver's car.
It's still only a 2 litre engine.
It's not massive.
Yeah, and but it was a manual, of course, and it was so short you could pull up at the traffic lights, lean behind you, and flip the roof over and clip it down. Can you?
Although the new one, the one that I've got, is a power folding hardtop, which I do have thoughts on. I had a power folding hardtop as well, but they still make a soft top. It's just one hand right behind.
Oh, really?
You. Yeah. It's 3 seconds up the roof or down.
Amazing stuff.
It's actually lighter than the original in 89, the current model.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
It's stubby and short. I had it next to a friend of ours, a mutual friend of ours, who has a Mini Cooper. Yeah. The Mini Cooper looks like an F-150 next to this.
Yeah.
So they've retained the size.
It's got more power. It drives like the original. I have nothing really bad to say about an MX-5. There's nothing bad you can say about it. If you know those classic British sports cars, MGA, MGB, people are like, what are those? Triumph, TR, 3, 2, 1, whatever they are.
Yeah.
But this is better because it works.
Well, this was the idea of the original one. Let's build a Lotus Elan, but let's build it with Japanese build quality.
Oh, but this is on Alpha, Damien.
Yeah. I know.
What about price point?
Alphas today.
Price point? As I said before, 150,000 dirhams. I bought mine in 2008 for the introductory price of 108,000 dirhams. So it's a reasonable set of inflation from 2008 to 24.
Sensible. Yeah.
Well, you know what? I'm transferring the money from Australian dollars. They were $39,000 back then, which works out about 110,000 dirhams in 1989.
So they've held the line on pricing.
Sensible inflation. Sensible. Like size inflation as well. So actually they've done well.
But can I just point out how excited genuinely all of us are to be talking about a fun classic sports car? It's not got a million horsepower. It hasn't got this. It's got CarPlay. But it's just so exciting to talk about it. A lot of the cars that are coming into the market with various bland crossovers, where's the excitement when we talk about it?
Yeah.
This is what the industry needs. The industry needs some exciting vehicles. I know we're going into an era of electrification, and there are some companies that are working hard on making them exciting. I've just seen the new Hyundai's coming out in other markets, the N-Series, the electric N-Series that actually sound like combustion engines. I think there's a room for these kind of
there should be, because this is what builds passion. You know, I've been driving my BMWs, my Land Cruisers. Those are great cars in different ways. But when you drive a Mazda MX-5, you suddenly discover, I hate to say it, the thrill of driving.
Yeah. So let's move on now. Noel Ebden is in absentia, so we're going to still have him in the studio via a recording, because he's been driving the Nissan Kicks. He's gallivanting around the world somewhere. Don't know where he is. Never know where Noel is half the time. But he's been on the road now for a while driving this Nissan Kicks. So let's have a listen to what he had to say.
It's quite actually sporty looking with its high rear lights, the roof spoiler, roof rails, especially around the back. It is quite a cool looking car. The front is a little less interesting, I would say, but it is quite cool. It's got some nice driving lights at the front as well, which do look good. It's good from the side, and they didn't try and hide the door handles. I hate it when manufacturers try and hide the door handles up at the back pillar. Inside, it is comfy, actually. Yeah, the seats are really nice. I had it for 4 days, so drove around, did quite a lot driving, actually, in it, quite a few miles. It's quite a nice place to be. It's not a big car. If you're looking for a big SUV, then obviously this isn't it. It is a soft roader at the end of the day. It's a small hatchback style SUV, but it's got a decent sized boot. There's plenty of room in the back as well, so if you've got kids, especially if they're sort of teenagers, etc., this will definitely still suit you. As far as kit goes, you get Bose audio system, you get a 7-inch central screen, big high center console, and Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, rear view camera, all the sensors, etc., all the things you would expect these days from the Japanese.
Now, not forgetting that Noel's staple car is a Ferrari, an old Ferrari, but a Ferrari. So the Kicks didn't really satiate his need for speed.
It's not fast. It is a 1.6 four-cylinder engine, but it's not going to give you any problems. It's a Nissan. It's going to run forever. It's good on fuel, so that's also a plus on it as well these days with the prices going up. It's not going to take you off-road, of course, but it will not cost you a fortune to fix. It does have the CVT gearbox, which I don't know anyone who likes the CVT gearbox, but Nissan seem to want to continue with it. I'm not going to comment on that anymore, but it isn't for me. It's not four-wheel drive. It kind of looks it. It is a front-wheel drive car. It does push on a bit in the corners, but it's got good brakes. It feels strong. It's well bolted together, and you can personalize it as well. This is something that I was a bit surprised about, actually. You can actually have the wing mirrors, door accents, and the front rear finish in whatever colour you want, or within reason anyway, with Nissan. That is the Nissan Kicks.
So there's Noel Ebden's review on the Nissan Kicks, starting price 71,000 dirhams on that one. We've got more reviews coming up. We're going to move from Japanese cars to Chinese cars. I'll tell you about another Chinese brand that's entered the market. In fact, a few entered last week. Have you heard of Chery? Well, if not, stay tuned. And we're also talking to we're talking with Jacques Brents, the Managing Director of AlphaTame Toyota and Lexus. I'm Damien Reid with Imtiaz Chanjado and Naz Chowdhury. Stay with us here on Motor Mania on Dubai Eye 103.8.
You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is Motor Mania with Damien Reid.
Yes, Motor Mania with you through until midday, and I'm still joined by Imtiaz Chanjado in the hot seat. Now, as we mentioned just before the break, we're talking about Chinese car brands that are hitting the market, and the newest brand, and it's the full mark, it's not a model, is Chery, C-H-E-R-Y, for those who are not familiar to it. And I was speaking to Michelle Ayette, who is the CEO of AW Rostamani, which is the distributor of Chery cars, amongst others. You might know that name, more familiar with the Nissan product as well. Some facts that he managed to share with us about the market here is in terms of Japanese cars, 76%, followed by American and European cars. Now, after the pandemic, this is what I found interesting. After the pandemic, Chinese cars entered the market in a more mainstream way than they did before. They took up 4% of the market. They are now sitting at about 10% of the market. Now, they picked that market share up, according to Mr. Ayat, in 1 year, in 2023, more than doubled it. And Chery's big launch is a big deal because they are the number one car exporter in China, and they also own some other sub-brands that you'll see floating around this region as well. So he told me that they're rolling out three models to kick off with.
We will start with the three products, Tiggo 8, Tiggo 7, and Tiggo 8 Hybrid.
Yes.
They will be available in the product between the internal combustion engine, the petrol and diesel, and the hybrid electric. We will have both.
This era we're going into, this market, how does this new era of brand of cars from China, for example, impacting on the traditional OEMs, and that's the thing that we're so used to.
This has changed. In the past, in the traditional period, all the families, they have the distributorship, are rich companies, rich groups, because everyone, the customer in the traditional period, his dream was to own a car. Now, the new generation, the Z generation, and the millennium, their aim is not to own the car. From ownership to usership, to use a car. But why you need a car? If you drive your car for 2 hours a day, 3 hours a day, or 4 hours a day, but you have to pay 1 year insurance, service, etc.
Yeah, so that was Michelle Ayette, the CEO of AW Rostamani, talking about the moving landscape of the car market in general, which he's bringing on the raft of Chinese brands we're seeing in here. We're seeing, obviously, Exeed, MG, Hongqi, Geely, and BYD, which is also brought in through the AlphaTame group as well. And with that, great opportunity to bring on. Well, you're not dealing with the Chinese side of things, but the Managing Director of AlphaTame for Toyota and Lexus, Jacques Brent, in the studio. Good morning, Jacques. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Damien. Great to be here.
Good to see you back. We did have Shadi talking about his FJ Cruiser. Yeah, I mean, before that, when you heard about Shadi outside, he wants to replace his 2014 FJ Cruiser with a Land Cruiser. Imtiaz Chan felt very strongly about it to say yes. Well, what are your thoughts? What's the situation at the moment before we get stuck into to the motorsport side of things with the Land Cruiser?
Yeah, I mean, you know, great choice, and thanks for the support.
it's given the truth, it's not a plug.
Given he's a long-time owner of one, and I did have a look at his when I left the studio the last time around. So, yeah, it is a great choice, particularly for the family size that he has that he indicated. But, you know, FJ Cruiser is a really strong and reliable vehicle. And I know he mentioned his mileage at, I think it was 300-odd thousand.
Mm.
We've had quite a few that have reached almost double that. So,
what's the highest mileage car, any product? Is it 1 million kilometers, 2 million?
Yeah, we've had a couple of million kilometer vehicles in the UAE.
Wow.
Yeah.
Does that even raise an eyebrow now? Like, oh, it's another 1 million kilometer car.
Yeah, that's very impressive.
Yeah, well, there you go. There you go, Shadi. If you're listening, I hope that helps. This is what I love about radio. Our listeners can speak to the boss directly. You can't do that in any other medium other than radio and Motor Mania. But let's get on to why you're in the studio with us this morning. Last time you were in the studio, we were talking about the One Mate Motorsport series you had with the off-roading side of things. Firstly, how did that go? And now we're moving into a second season.
Yeah, I mean, we did. You know, the last time I was here was back in June of last year when we were celebrating the success of that season one. And it was really, really successful. So, you know, we expected, given it was our first, try at it, we're a little bit unsure of what the outcome would be. But we got well over 1,200 applicants for it and, you know, managed to get through all the phases of it and, you know, got some 24-odd people the opportunity to experience our vehicles in off-road condition and obviously have a great competition. The other good thing about it was very diverse in terms of who made it through to the finals. So we had, 13 different nationalities out of the 24. We had like 25% women participants and about 20% local participants. So really, really great diversity of people. Getting to experience, obviously, the great products and had a lot of fun doing it. And fortunately, unfortunately, a South African won. So congratulations to Brandon. I had nothing to do with it.
I wonder.
Brandon was great value. He was in the studio with us as well. Yeah. He was. You couldn't have got a better ambassador for the project than him. He was so enthusiastic about it and winning it and doing what he did. So obviously it made a lot of sense to kick off with off-roading because this is where we are in the desert with the off-roader side of things. But now we're moving into season two, onto the track and onto the hard stuff, I believe.
Yeah, we want to make sure we had a broader appeal relative to the first event, which was predominantly off-road based. And there's a lot of passion out there for track racing and obviously for participation from the asphalt side of it as opposed to the gravel side of it. And we're also trying to find a format, at least from the way that we executed the event, that allowed as much participation from a driving perspective as possible. And obviously the track, and particularly starting with karting as a transition to ultimately the track and the vehicle side of it, was an ideal way to do it. So yeah, hopefully we broaden the appeal, tend to a different part of the market from a motorsport perspective. But a good opportunity for us not only to showcase things like Land Cruiser, but also in this particular case, the Supra will be the hero vehicle.
Fantastic. So the Supra, you just nailed it. It is the hero vehicle. I've got fond memories of the previous generations of Supra and this one as well. And of course, when you're talking about on-track stuff as well, you've had great success with the 86 leading up to that as well. What a fantastic little car that is. Rear-wheel drive, bit of horsepower, 200 horsepower thereabouts. Great way to start and get into it. The Supra a bit more than that. What sort of modifications, what do you need to do to take the car from the showroom to what you have for your contestants?
Yeah, in this particular case, we're kind of executing the autocross side of it, so much more of a kind of controlled driving timed perspective, so a lot more around the skill side of it, so not an outright straight speed track race. So yeah, we've put 4-point harnesses in, obviously made sure we've got the right equipment in the vehicle from a security and safety perspective, and we'll obviously have the required care in attendance in case anything does go wrong, but we don't expect it to be. We've also got obviously professional drivers in the vehicle with the contestants as well to help.
So how does the format work? When you start, what sort of series of competitions do you go through, and what sort of training do you get, and to how to hopefully eventually make it to the final?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing that we're trying to do is kind of democratize motorsport. As you know, motorsport is a little bit of an elitist sport. It's not the cheapest sport to be involved in. So this was an opportunity for us to create a broader appeal. And obviously by kind of recording what we've done on film, we're able to also share it in a broader perspective, as we did and very successfully in season one with millions of views across YouTube and Facebook and on Shahid. So yeah, I mean, this is an opportunity for us to do that with this particular format, and yeah, we're hopeful that that it goes well. But yeah, we're expecting great things from a participation perspective. We have over 1,600 entrants.
Wow.
And then we will do over two consecutive long weekends. We will kind of whittle that down to the final 48. So we hope to get circa 1,500 people through those two weekends. Giving them obviously a bit of time on the track from the go-kart with a karts perspective. So Karting Town in Sharjah has come on board to help us with the facility over there. We have Dunlop on board obviously from a tyre perspective, support us on the tyres on the vehicle. And then as I said, we'll also take them through as we did in season one with the media training side, because an important part of what you ultimately get to do in this is get to speak to you guys.
Mm.
And then there's also a certain amount of fitness, as we saw in the most, I know you're passionate about this, Formula One, it's even on the karts, you'll see it. You need to be relatively fit in order to do that, and obviously the G-forces that are at stake. So yeah, multiple aspects of it, the media, the fitness side, the mental side of it, and then ultimately the track challenge and the technicalities around that.
Yeah, so again, they're complete novices. You don't need to have a motorist racing license. You just roll up with an intention to be on that grid.
That's it. All that's required.
Fantastic. And I've got to say, too, congratulations. With in the years leading up to this, because you go back and look at the Toyota 86 series that ran here for a couple of years in Dubai and Abu Dhabi, just last weekend, one of your competitors, the Toyota 86, Rima Jafali, young, fantastic young Saudi woman, started her motorsport career in a Toyota 86. And last weekend in the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, she was on the grid with the Formula One Academy, racing with all the other fantastic women in this new series to a global audience. And it all began with the 86 series. So there's absolute positive proof that you can go somewhere if you start your motor racing here at this grassroots level.
Yeah, definitely, as I said, an opportunity to make sure, not everyone has the opportunity to be involved, but this was a relatively easy way for people being involved. All you had to do was enter and hopefully get selected and make it through, obviously, the various rounds.
Yeah, so what are the targets from a corporate side of things? What is AlphaTame Toyota looking to achieve from this series?
Yeah, I mean, everyone knows Toyota for, the durability, reliability aspect of it. But we try to inject a little bit of passion and heart into the brand. And this was an opportunity for us to kind of go where our customers are and what they're passionate about. And that's why we did that. So I think it helps to connect the brand even stronger with the customers that are out there, and something that they're extremely passionate about. There is a large following, as we know, in the UAE around motorsport in general, and that's a way of connecting with them.
Yeah, and how many Supras you have all kitted out?
So, yeah, we'll be using six Supras in this particular event. So,
amazing stuff.
What about the 86, though? Is that headed back here?
Watch the space. But
I hope so. I had the first one ever sold from you guys, so I would like to see it come back. It was a very impressive product for 2012.
Yeah, it is a great little car, and yes, I think very, very soon you'll have the
opportunity. So he means yes, people. Yes, it's coming back.
But the Supra has been a phenomenal success in terms of...
What a great car.
Yeah, just getting the emotion back into the game. Fantastic looking car,
and
great car to drive.
And kudos for bringing the manual. I have to say, I know you probably don't sell a lot of them, but compared to some other brands that we were talking about just half an hour ago, I think bringing Mazda, I think bringing the manual back is just such a strong intent to what your customers want. Mazda should do the same. They're wonderful people, and they're listening. They should do the same.
Yeah, no, fantastic. So finally, where can we see it? Where can we follow it? How do we keep progress with the Supras?
Yeah, I mean, we'll post obviously on all our social channels, but also on the YouTube channel, the AlphaTame YouTube channel. Obviously, have the opportunity to see it and follow along and get to see as the contestants go through the various rounds.
Fantastic. Just got one text message just come in before I let you go. And this is, as soon as I can get back on the screen, is Toyota planning, this is a cold question, I'm throwing it straight at you, apologies for that, but this is what we're here for. Is Toyota planning to sell the LC70 series 2.8 diesel in this market?
Yeah, we are looking at it. We haven't firmly made that decision yet, but just globally, there's quite a shortage on LC70 at the moment. I know there's quite a lot of customers out there waiting for their particular vehicle. So once we've satisfied the demand on the gasoline side, we'll obviously go back and look at the diesel opportunity. But I know, and I've had a lot of people approach me on the 2.8 automatic specifically.
Jax, perfect timing to have a car company boss in the studio, because it is the holy month of Ramadan, of course. Traditionally, it's a time for great deals as well that are going on. We mentioned in the first hour how perhaps deals have changed a little bit in the last 10 or 15 years. How are you seeing things from your side with Toyota and Lexus at AlphaTame?
Yeah, I mean, traditionally, Ramadan has been, strong selling season for us, particularly in the automotive industry. In general, it's a strong retail season, but in the automotive industry, it's been, really the busiest season of the year for us. Obviously, with the whole COVID pandemic and then the supply that came after that, the Ramadan deals, in terms of the extent of the offerings, were reduced dramatically. But I think this year, people have already seen quite an escalation in terms of the spend and how attractive the offers have become. So, yeah, we definitely see an uptick from a volume perspective during Ramadan, not as large as it used to be, but, still fairly substantial. But I think this year will be pretty good, just given the competitors of the offers out there. So almost everyone has got a deal at the moment on one of their products. So obviously the customer's looking for a replacement for his FJ Cruiser. It's a great time to go into the showroom and have a look at the Land Cruiser deals.
Yeah, and what sort of offers now? Is it changing from when I first came here? It was all about you get free this and free that, you get extra part, you get an upscale in the spec of the car. But now it's noticing, we mentioned the first day again, it's more about how to reduce the spend rather than to add things on, because, you know, times are tough for some people. So, you know, 0% financing or extended lease periods, or, I mean, how are you seeing the shift change in terms of what you get when you walk into a showroom these days?
Yeah, I mean, you know, interest rate reductions or 0% interest, in particularly in this high interest environment, is a very popular offer, and almost every single one of the manufacturers have got a variation of that out there at the moment. The other one, as you touched on, is the overall cost of ownership. That's the one thing, buying the vehicle and being able to afford that. For many people, maintaining the vehicle and running the vehicle is the cost. So, you know, we have things like free insurance, free license and registration, and in some cases, you know, free maintenance occurring, and extended warranties, obviously, for the people that plan to keep them for an extended period of time. So much more value added, much more focus on, you know, long-term ownership and overall cost of ownership than the straight out, you know, discount up front from a price perspective, and all some of the other, you know, interesting offers we've seen, like gold bars, etc.
Yes, good old gold bars. I haven't seen the gold bar in a while.
Or if you buy a house, you get a car in the front yard or something like that. But
or a jet.
Well, that was
the
case once.
I remember the jet days, yeah.
Yes. But yeah, I mean, that's actually a really interesting point. So making the process smoother and easier is just, you know, it's a one-stop shop. You just get everything done seamlessly. Makes it easier. We've got another question's come in. This is for you, Jacques. Please ask Jacques, when will we see South African-style Hiluxes in the UAE, also when the new Prado is coming?
Yeah,
that's a popular question.
What is a South African-style Hilux?
Everyone loves the Prado in this region, and I get that question every week.
Yeah, I mean, the big difference largely between the South African and even the Australian Hiluxes, for that matter, relative to maybe the UAE, is that the UAE is predominantly much more of the workhorse application Hiluxes versus the leisure application Hiluxes. We have launched the GRS version of the Hilux, which, you know, is proving quite popular from a leisure application perspective. So that is one opportunity. The other big difference between those markets, Australia and South Africa, relative to yours, obviously the diesel powertrains versus the predominantly petrol powertrains. So, but yeah, I mean, yes, we do have some, and GRS is a case in point when it comes to Hilux. And then the product question, I'll probably get that more than anything.
More than good
at the
morning,
moment.
I guess.
So yeah, I mean, I think you know, just around the middle of the year, we should have some great news when it comes to Prado. So yeah, it will and has been launched in some markets globally. So we'll look to roll that out in the UAE in the kind of the second half of the year.
Amazing stuff. I drove the GR Hilux when I was back home in Australia, and I can see why it was the number one selling car. Period.
Isn't
in the country.
Crazy that the Hilux is the best-selling car in Australia?
The two best-selling cars back there are both
the Ford
pickup
Ranger
trucks.
And
the Ford Ranger is behind it, but the Hilux has taken over a mantle that the Corolla held for many, many years down there. So amazing stuff. Look, Jacques, thank you so much for joining us this morning. It's been fantastic. Thanks for taking the calls. I just threw them straight at you. So and AJ, thanks for sending that one in about the Prado. Everyone's asking for that. So yeah, it's been great. We'll keep an eye out for the motor racing series with the Supras, and yeah, we'll get out there soon.
Yeah, and thanks for being in, and appreciate the invite, and obviously the opportunity to talk about Toyota and obviously Alpha Tame. So
always there. Thank you so much. Thanks, Intershan. That's about all we've got time for this morning.
See you next week.
We'll do it again next week. Thanks for joining us this week on Motor Mania, guys, and appreciate that. And we'll be back again on air for the next Motor Mania next week, next couple of weeks here on Dubai 103.8.